Welcome to Dog Talk and Kitties Too. I'm Tracy Hotchner. I wrote the Dog Bible, Everything Your Dog Wants You to Know, as well as the Cat Bible, Everything Your Cat Expects You to Know. This episode features one of three guests who were part of my weekly hour-long NPR show broadcast over the air every Sunday on WLIW-FM 88.3, the only NPR station on Long Island where it has broadcast continuously for over 15 years. This show is about dogs, cats, and other creatures who share the planet with us. Please check out my other Pet Talk podcasts at TracyHotchnerPets.com. This show would not be possible without the longtime support of Woruva, the pet food company founded and privately run by David Foreman, who named it after his rescued kitties, Webster, Rudy, and Vanessa. Woruva is a quirky name for a company with whimsical names for the dozens of different cans and pouches of cat food they make. But what sets them apart is how serious David is about high-quality nutrition. They were the first pet food company to use human edible ingredients and process them in the same facilities that make human food, remaining privately owned and run, accountable only to their own high standards. This show is also made possible with the generous support of Dr. Elsie's, the privately owned litter and cat food company founded by Dr. Bruce Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian. He personally created many styles of litter to make sure that even the fussiest cats would not have out-of-litter box problems, the number one reason people abandon their kitties. Dr. Elsie also created his own brand of cat food called Clean Protein, the first dry cat food I can recommend because it's based on the protein found in a cat's natural prey. Dr. Elsie's is also the founding and continuing sponsor of my New York Cat Film Festival, of which I am the founder and director, along with the annual New York Dog Film Festival, which premiere in New York City every October and then travel the USA and Canada supporting local animal welfare groups. Go to dogfilmfestival.com and catfilmfestival.com to find out when we'll be where. I was pretty excited to read that a very famous guy in the veterinary field, maybe not famous to you who have a dog, a cat, or maybe even a reptile, but to veterinarians, Andy Rourke is a very famous doctor because he launched a podcast and a website called Dr. Andy Rourke, which is there for veterinarians. It's a place to explore the pressures, the challenges, the demands, the difficulties and the joys of being a vet. And I was very excited to see him give this amazing quote about my darling, delightful partner, Dr. Doug Mader, on Exotic Pets, also a greatly adored veterinarian, about his book, The Vet and Noah's Ark. And Andy Rourke gave it this blurb that was like, oh my God, if only, you know, James Herriot was alive now and was in the inner city and had to deal with parrots, this is what the book would be. So I thought, well, can I meet Andy Rourke? Because he's such a kind person that he took time out from obviously a very busy schedule to say something really supportive and kind about another veterinarian's memoir. And so, of course, Doug Mader said, sure, here's Andy Rourke. And I'm saying, hi, Andy Rourke. I'm really glad to meet you because you're an upbeat person talking about sometimes difficult topics in your field. And I just think the veterinarians are really lucky to have you. I know that on your website, it mentions that in the very first month of your website, you got 200,000 page views. That's more than me in probably a decade. Well, I'm exaggerating. But clearly, you were talking to an audience that needed a leader, a cheerleader, a thought leader, an idea person. And you seem so humble on your website, and your podcast is incredibly successful. Do you appreciate the breadth and the depth of your value to the other vets?
It's something I've tried to come an understanding and get my head around it. It still blows my mind, Tracy. I feel so honored to have a platform and to have veterinarians and veterinary technicians that care what I have to say and that listen. And so I'm routinely surprised when people come up to me and say that the work that I've done have had a real impact on them. And it's just, it's humbling. It really is.
I got the feeling that would be true because you just talk from the heart. The last newsletter you had was a hoot and a half. It was about veterinarians throwing their pelvises out and maybe I shouldn't dance so hard right away. I'm like, this guy is so great because you have a sense of humor. And in your previous blog, you sort of suggested dancing, right? I mean, yes. Talk about the way of just kind of lifting spirits by just going out there.
Well, you know, it's that's really, I think, the opportunity was there for me, and I was very sort of fortunate in this way. You know, I graduated from veterinary school in 2008, and that's when social media was really sort of taking off, and that platform really didn't exist to the general populace before that. And so my wife and I had just had a baby, and so I got on social media, I got on Facebook to share things with my family. And then I started just kind of telling jokes from practice. And I really think that we have a stressful job as vets, and humor just makes that stress. It lessens it, obviously. It's a break from it. And so I started telling jokes, and people really enjoyed it. So I sort of kept telling more, but it really just sort of took off from there. I think I really struggled to understand why people resonated so strongly with kind of what I was doing until someone said to me, and I've heard this again and again since then, they said, you do this thing of being honestly positive, and that's not something that we see a lot
right.
of. I mean, it's owning the fact that this is a hard job, and there's a lot of really sad things and challenging things, and it's still the most wonderful job in the world. And you can, both of those things can be true. It can be hard, and people can be mean sometimes, and you can carry those burdens and also still be really deeply proud of the work that you do. And we can laugh. I mean, we can laugh together. And so I got this kick recently of just, you know, as just a tension breaker, I thought it would make people chuckle, but I sort of called for a revolution for more dancing in vet clinics, and obviously only when appropriate, only in appropriate situations. But I feel like, I have worked in places where there will be, you know, a little bit of music on, and people, you'll see them do a little cha-cha as they cross the treatment room, and it makes you smile just yeah. seeing somebody, you know. I mean, we see this all the time. I go to a taco restaurant, and the guys in the back will be singing almost every time we go, and it makes me feel so good. And so I wanted to kind of call out something like that. And a lot of times if we get a reminder or someone gives you permission and says,
yes.
hey, you have my permission to dance while you work, then they'll do it. And if that makes people, just one person will read it and do it and make the room laugh. And, but boy, if I can get 100, 200, 500, 1,000 hospitals, one person to do a little dance and make other people chuckle, man, isn't that a little bit of just joy that we were
yes.
able to spread out there?
Absolutely. And the whole, I think what I'm thinking about, and why your website meant a lot to me, was that I think that the pains of being a veterinarian are invisible to the public. They're invisible to the general public. They're invisible to generally pet owners, and even specifically patients/clients when they're in the hospital, the exam room, on the way out the door. I think that there's some kind of feeling that almost of too much familiarity and, in a weird way, not enough depth of respect for the veterinary profession by the very people, those of us with pets, who depend on those doctors, because so many of us had this goofy little childhood dream, I love dogs, I love cats, I want to be a veterinarian. And I talk about this so often on the show, because I'm always introducing brilliant, amazing doctors with many letters after their name. Oh, they didn't just get their DVM. They're also a PhD. They're an MA. Or Dr. Elizabeth Hodgkins. Hi, I got a law degree while I was at it. And we think, well, they're just like me, because really they just love pets. You know, I don't think you go into the neurologist who does brain surgery and take the same liberties in the way you think about that doctor's work.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I do think that there's very much a familiarity with veterinary medicine or veterinarians. It's a double-edged sword, isn't it?
Correct.
Like, there's something wonderful about having people come in, and, you know, I've seen them. This is the third time in 3 months that I'm seeing them for their young pet that they have sort of brought into their family, just because they're getting their vaccines up to date and things like that. And we've talked a couple of times, and every time they come in, they tell me stories about their pet, and we laugh together.
Right.
And it's a beautiful thing for me to feel like a trusted confidant and a family friend. But it can be really hard when a month after that, this pet has run out and been hit by a car, and now they're having a really hard time, and they that familiarity turns into just a candor and a willingness to show emotion that you wouldn't necessarily show in another way. It's that closeness that lets people maybe unload a little bit more than they would. And again, I would never give that closeness up, but it does make it challenging on the other side.
And I think the other thing, and it's why the organization Not One More Vet, which I've had people on from it and I'm going to have the new head of the board of directors on, and why I've had so many vets on talking about what the challenges are, to the point of the high suicide rate, to the point of people living in despair that could tip them over to suicide. The fact that as a person, I'm now on the list of, I don't know what I'm called, Andy, I'm not good at titles, but I'm the only, I think, non-vet person that they've invited to be, maybe call it advisory council. Sure. I'm not sure. It's because there's so much to be learned. Like, do you say the word suicide when you know that somebody in the veterinary profession is really struggling? Is it okay to use the word suicide? Are you feeling suicidal, or is that the wrong thing to say? There's right and wrong things to say, but to your average kitten owner, you know, aging dog owner, it's like, suicide? What have they got to be depressed about?
Yeah.
They've got it good. They get to see puppies and kittens all day. And, you know, your website talks about words that are alien to the people who take advantage of the wisdom and the compassion that vets have. Uncertainty, insecurity, inadequacy, stress, burnout, isolation, exhaustion. Those are a lot of really heavy words. And that's on a daily basis. And yes. I think part of it is you're going from an exam room with the real puppy, puppy breath, to the one where you're trying to make a diagnosis on a very complicated situation where maybe the owner has not done a lot of things correctly in the management of that pet. Now you're the one left holding the bag and have to figure out what's wrong and how do I fix it? And, what if they don't have the money? Yeah. I mean, that's not something that a human medical doctor ever worries about. It's never part of the conversation.
It is. You're exactly right. It's a different beast from human medicine.
Yes.
And again, I go back. I know I keep talking about sort of this double-edged sword. There are really beautiful things about that too, in that there's a lot of things that are broken about human medicine. And there's
heavens,
a lot of
yes.
things that make me so happy to be a veterinarian. You know, my family went through a cancer 2 years ago, and everything is great. It turned
Good.
Out totally
Thank
fine.
God.
But yes, we were so lucky, so fortunate. But boy, it really opened my eyes to the differences in veterinary medicine and human health care and sort of a lot of the uncertainty and the administrative burden and the bureaucracy and all of these things that we don't have that in veterinary medicine. It's really wonderful to be able to get right to the heart of the matter and help people. But the downside is, you know, the financial implications are very real in veterinary medicine, and there's not a support structure like there is in human healthcare, and that's a real burden. I would say, you know, the secret burdens I think that may surprise a lot of people is I think probably the hardest thing on veterinarians is it's this position of continuing to advocate for the silent partner here, who are the pets, and you feel responsible for these pets, and you can't make people do anything. You can open your heart to them and you can try to educate them, but you can't make them take care of a pet in the way that you would or the way that you want them to. And I think that's a silent burden a lot of us carry because our powers are pretty limited, but boy, we care a lot. And so I think that's a big one.
That's a really good point, because that family member is silent. And you're seeing one of my pet peeves, if you will, is aging dogs and cats in daily pain from arthritis that could be mitigated. It could be mitigated with medication. It's even affordable. But people refuse to look at the pet that has trouble getting up from lying down, that's limping or lame or slowed down when moving, and they don't do anything about it. I mean,
that's a great example.
Must be horrible for you. You guys, otherwise they go, you're just trying to sell me some expensive drugs.
Well, it is. And, you know, there's the old saying, ignorance is bliss. And it once you recognize the signs of, say, arthritis in senior cats, great, great example. You see it and you can say to the people, I really think that she's in pain. I think she's uncomfortable.
Yes.
And there's a chance that they're going to look back at you and say, she's just old. Like, she's just old. And that is the type of difficulty, I think, that you carry with a veterinarian. If I was a mechanic and you brought me your car and I said, listen, I really feel like your air filters are jammed up. Yes. And you said, I don't want to do it. I would say, okay, well, it's your car. And if it breaks down, it might blow up
on the highway.
Exactly. But that's not true with the pets. I say, well, it's your cat, and your cat is the one who is going to carry the burden of this. So I think that's a part of it. The last part I'd sort of throw out there, too, just again, is, and I sort of try to remind doctors and technicians and staff of this, too, is we see people a lot of time on the worst day of their life. Like something terrible has happened to a furry family member that they love, and they're coming in, and to them, this is the worst day of their life. But the problem for us is it's just another evening appointment, and we've got three more of these.
That's right.
And so you can never be unempathetic to that person who, you know, whose pet had a terrible accident or got in and ate something toxic, things like that. And they're terrified. I never want to not empathize with that person. But boy, when your whole day is lined up with people who are having this horrible, terrible level experience, it's hard to maintain that level of stress absorption along. And it goes back to why I say things like, we should be dancing more. We should be telling jokes more often, because you have to be able to kind of bounce back from that and reset. And don't get me wrong, it's not all that way. The puppies and kittens are there and they're great, and we get to see a lot of pets that, you know, that you have a relationship with them and with the owners. And so it really does balance out. But, you know, I think most of us have recognized in life that when it rains, it pours. And it's that way in medicine, too. You can go along and just roll along and have a really good experience. And then I swear, all of the tough cases come in, you know, back to back to back over a couple of weeks. And it can feel really heavy. Yeah. And then it kind of goes away. But sometimes it seems like it rains for a long time.
Well, I think that the value of Dr. Andy Roark, spelled O-R-A-R-K, R-O-A-R-K. I'm looking right at it and not able to say letters. Roark. Is that it's a place, it's a forum, it's someone hearing you. You the vet technician, you the vet assistant, you the doc, you the surgeon. Andy's hearing you and he's speaking for all of you. And I think Not One More Vet is an organization that grew from a desperate need for people at desperate points in their career, in their professional moment, personal in life. There's a lifeboat app. They actually have a 911 now, which I'll be talking about with Dr. Borquin. But it's that bad. It can get that bad. And this is just in an ordinary, everyday, low-key clinic. If you go to a specialty place, you have animals coming in who are in dire situations often, and requiring really costly interventions because there aren't any cheap ones.
Yeah.
It's like the highest level of vet medicine is using the same tools, the same equipment, the same machines as human medicine. So anybody had an MRI lately and had to pay for it themselves? Well, if you pay for it for your dog, I live in Vermont where it's a bargain at $4,500. That's for the MRI to find out what's wrong. And then you have to discuss if you can figure it out. Well, then what do you do about it? So it's the docs in those places get the really complicated ones that the clinic vets either are home at sleep because it's night, or they say, this is beyond my capability. I need to send you X number of miles away, you know, raise your blood pressure, raise your worry level even higher. I don't know how many puppies there are that can come in a day and really relieve that in a satisfying way. I think that really it's the people bringing the pets in need to really have a lot. Then we need sensitivity training.
Yeah.
You know, it's really a reality check for us. That we're there using the compassion, using the sponge-like absorption of people and pets' pain and suffering and confusion. You guys are absorbing it all the time. When we come in the room, are we just going to pile on to that? Or are we going to notice there's a human inside the lab coat?
Yeah.
I think that's really important for us to understand, that your people that are just, it is a wave all the time of problem solving. And often when it's solved, you know, you're not looking for a gold star or a medal around your neck, but it's right. like, oh, good, that got solved, as opposed to, wow, that doctor just saved my dog from death or a big surgery or, you know, being in a lot of pain for longer. I just a quick example, my between how we look at human doctors and veterinary doctors, or really how they look at their own profession and their obligation, how they want to present themselves. So my husband had cataract surgery a year ago. The doctor made a terrible error afterwards, and she missed a retinal tear, and she missed a retinal detachment that became a macular detachment. She basically blinded him in one eye. Oops. There's not much you can do about it other than go to another doctor who then does multiple surgeries to try and restore the eye. At no point do you ever hear the doctor who made the giant blunder ever say, because God forbid, because then they have these legal issues, oh my God, that was what that was. I can't tell you how bad I feel. Mm. Forget that. Nothing even close to that. And we're talking about a major insult. I had my dog Maisie just a week ago presenting with some strange symptoms. Won't go into it. I can say they were really strange. Swollen eyebrows in her face and one ear swollen. Within 2 days, we tried antihistamines. First one paw, swollen to the point you couldn't see her toes, really. Then the other leg. And I take her to the ER place, and we go through every test, and it all comes out inconclusive. But she's alive now, and we got her on the other side of it with massive amounts of, you know, interventions of various kinds, medicines and stuff. It seems to be a bad reaction to a monoclonal antibody, adverse reaction, but that's not the point. The point is that my vet, who was working at the emergency place for 3 years and now has come back to the regular clinic, when I came in to see her, when Maisie and I got out of the other hospital, came in for our acupuncture, she was almost on the verge of tears. And I said, this isn't your fault. I'm the one who wanted these injections, and you only could go on the information that was out there. And she was on the verge of tears and said, I was afraid you would think I was a crap doctor.
Oh, yeah. That moment for me, Andy,
was all that we need to talk about. That's how a veterinarian feels, people. They make a best judgment case to give something to take a dog out of arthritic pain. The patient does great. The owner is thrilled. I go back from the second and then the third injection. It's made by a major pharmaceutical company. The FDA has approved it. So it turns out this adverse reaction can happen, but it's not really explained. There is no checklist to go through ahead of time. Did your dog already have pancreatitis before you started this kind of thing? But the fact is that she viewed that as a terrible error on her part and said it to the human owner.
Said it to you.
That's how vets feel, guys. We need to understand that they're sponges for our pain and our pet's pain, and they take responsibility and they feel personally involved. Andy, this is so far beyond what human doctors do. And the people that you're speaking to with your podcast and your website, they really need you. We need the dancing man. Because I can only just say to the people who listen to what I have to say and follow me and read something, I have to really, I don't know how to get this across strongly enough. We have to protect and wrap in cotton wool, as the British call it. We have to wrap our vets in cotton. We have to treat them with carefulness and care and generosity of spirit, because that's what you give us. And I don't think we give it back enough. I think we take and take and take and think it's our due. And I think that really there's nothing you guys can do other than band together in a podcast, a website, not one more vet, speak it out loud. And the people that are lucky enough to be in your office, in your clinic, we just need, it's not really a slap upside the head. It's just shoe on the other foot. It's like, look at the other end of the telescope and what this would feel like. And how scary it is for a young vet or an old vet to be in an exam room alone with a dog not doing well, just ain't doing right, as vets call it, and have to figure out with a nonverbal patient, the dog or cat, and a pretty useless human. Well, I think it happened on Wednesday. You know, I mean, we're not very good. And you guys are the detectives with a ticking clock, kind of a gun at your head. Hurry up, figure it out.
You know, I'm not a huge fan of social media these days, but I will say, I think that one of the best things that has happened for veterinarians is the ability to get out of the little silos that we used to be in. So if you think about before the internet, you would go to work in your little practice and there might be another doctor there.
You're right.
You know, or maybe two for most of us. But you worked with them and it was always kind of this awkward relationship where you would sort of say, well, I want to present as competent as the other doctors. And so I'm a little worried of showing weakness and things like that. And so I really think that when I came out and started writing about, I share my mistakes and the funny things that I sort of see and the way I trip on my own feet. And I think that it resonated so strongly because before that, no one had anyone say out loud, boy, I made this assumption and I really wish I hadn't.
Right.
Just being able to laugh and say, I had this funny experience today and this is how it went. And I think that isolation, I think, was very challenging. And so, you know, the Not One More Vet group is a wonderful group that really appeared because of social media. And it was for people to be able to come together and say, hey, you're not alone. I've seen this. I have also had that experience. I think that there's a lot of, I think everyone is insecurity is something that we all wrestle with. And so I think a lot of people are really afraid to say, I wish I had known this, or I wish I had recognized these signs earlier. And if you don't verbalize that, then someone else can't say, you didn't do anything wrong. Like you're a human being.
Correct.
But I think a lot of us just sat with that in silence, and it took other people sort of being able to step up and say, oh boy, guys, let me tell you about how my day went.
Right. It's really important. It's going around the fireside, you know, and just being able to tell those tales and those stories. And when we hold in our doubt and fear and pain as professionals, it can amplify.
Yes.
It festers there. Then the next time you think you've made a mistake or not a good decision, or you didn't say something exactly right to Mrs. McGillicuddy when you said, you got to put that cat to sleep. That cat's been near death for weeks. Let it go. I mean, I'm not saying you would ever use those words. That's why I can't be a vet, because that's what I would say. There's no way anyone's going to let me be their vet, I assure you. But, you know, all those things you can criticize yourself for, or how you could have done it better, saying them out loud unweights you of them, unburdens you of them. And then you can go on and you know, open the next exam door and see what surprise is there in the form of a four-legged. Andy, we've run out of time. And I really appreciate the enormous amount of time, energy, and effort you've put into the profession, both professionally, just in your clinic for your lucky patients, and also for all the other docs and vet techs out there. They appreciate you. I appreciate you. Keep up the good work. Keep on dancing.
Thanks, Tracy.
I hope you enjoyed the show. There are a few more special companies that make this show possible, and I hope you'll try their products because they support my mission to entertain you with valuable information and advice. This show is supported by Earth Animal, which is privately owned by Dr. Bob and Susan Goldstein, where they create holistic pet wellness products with an emphasis on their stewardship of the Pet Sustainability Coalition. Earth Animal makes a dazzling array of healing products for dogs and cats, as well as the innovative dog chew, No Hide, and the hybrid dry food, Wisdom, which is sometimes all that my picky Weimaraner Maisie will eat. The show is also brought to you in part by Evermore Pet Food, privately owned by two dedicated women who take human edible, ethically sourced ingredients to gently cook dog food that is then frozen in pouches and shipped right to your door. They founded and run their own company and answer to their own high standards without interference from venture capital investors. My dogs love it every single day.